success for me was being able to create a narrative and a platform to be able to share what was really true to me. And through my art, I'm able to do that. And that's the success. That's all I need to be able to do that. It's not a money metric. It's not a clout or fame metric. It's simply the idea of being able to wake up every single morning and keep doing what I want to do. And that for me has been amazing.
I'm Tom Ward, and over the last couple years, I've had the chance to sit down with some of the biggest celebrities and influencers in the world. What I've always found most fascinating is the stories of the businesses that they've built behind the scenes. On this show, you'll get an inside look of what it takes to build a successful business from some of the biggest celebrities, business people, and up-and-coming entrepreneurs in the world. This is The Tom Ward Show.
Hey guys, welcome to The Tom Ward Show, where each week we talk to some of the most successful people in the world. It's time to level up. Today we've got Devin Desjardins, artist. We're in his beautiful studio in Little Tokyo, LA. We'll get some, insert B-roll here, Michael. We'll get some B-roll of the studio, but you know, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming. It's a pleasure.
Now you have the wildest story of how you even got into this. Your origin story is like otherworldly. So tell us how you even started painting.
I was going through Instagram. I had probably 4,000 or 5,000 followers at the time. I had this random DM from a guy named Zach Love in Indiana, who's now a friend of mine, but at the time was completely random guy, mid-30s, lived on a farm. Was like, hey man, I'll pay you $100 to talk to you. I was like, big red flag.
Yeah, what do you think? Yeah. Like dick pics?
We laugh about it together all the time now, but I was like, you know, I'm kind of broke because I've wasted all my money on clothing. I'm living in my friend's apartment, sleeping on his couch.
Yeah.
I got to pay off my student loan soon. What am I going to do? And I said, well, $100 is going to get me groceries for the week. If anything gets weird, I'm hanging up and I'm blocking the number.
All right.
So I jumped on the phone call with him, and he, you know, just had this kind of assertiveness and this like calmness in a sense to his voice. And he said, you know, I've been following you for a while. You know, I feel like you're interested in creative things. By any chance, did you study religion or spirituality or philosophy in school? And I was like, yeah, I just finished studying that. And he goes, well, I know this might sound weird, but you know, I've been thinking about you, and something out there is telling me to tell you to start painting. And I was like, okay, that's kind of weird. And he's just like, you know, do me a favor, like pick up a canvas and just start trying. It's like, okay, I'll check back in with you. And that was the phone call. And so
wait, hold on. Before you even move on to your story, like you get off the phone call, you got $100.
I remember I got the Venmo.
You could have like, immediately said, you could have went like two ways. You could have gone, all right, that guy's fucking insane.
Yeah.
Like, why is some dude in Indiana thinking of me in the first place, right? So that's strange. Like, I'm just going to keep trying to the clothing thing happen. Or the other side could go, like, be open to it. And, like, some random, I mean, it's the most random thing I've ever heard of.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was unsettling. But at the same point, I feel like, and a lot of, I guess, my story post that conversation is just, you have these little nudges from people in your life that feel almost like a divine moment. And you know, a divine moment can be kind of misconstrued in so many ways and manufactured due to how we want things to work.
Sure.
But, you know, I think there is these moments where they kind of poke you and you have this gut feeling and this kind of overwhelming sensation that, yeah, maybe this is right. And for me, that's what happened in the conversation.
And it doesn't even make sense. Like you say, okay, yeah, we all have these little moments, you know, like, hey, something in my gut feels like if I take this job, it'll work out for me or something like that.
Yeah.
But there's never, I need like a direct sign from God. Like I need somebody to call me and go do this. And like you got hit over the head with it. Like there was nothing subtle about this at all.
Not at all.
It was like an actual guy hitting you up, calling you, go buy a canvas and paint like now.
Yeah.
And you listened.
Yeah. And it wasn't like an immediate response of like, hey, I'm just going to be a painter all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. I remember I went and bought the canvas. I was, you know, I'm not joking. It was North Hollywood. I had a friend named Brian. He was working at like an art school randomly enough. And he's like, come crash on my couch. I was applying after the clothing to be like a medical salesman, suit and tie job, going into these interviews, like so lost and just confused. And I was like, you know what? Maybe I just need to take this step and see what happens. Like, I got nothing else to lose at this point before I go give it to like the corporate man.
Yeah, yeah.
And I started messing around. And it's funny because, you know, so much of the work now that we'll talk about is, you know, using shapes. And I remember I did this monochromatic kind of print on a 20 by 20 inch canvas, and it was like triangle, circle, square, triangle, circle, square, and it was kind of this cool, like, you know, monogram print. And I sent him a picture. I was like, what do you think, man? Like, thinking like this is gonna be the moment, like, yeah, it's all hit. And he's like, yeah, keep going.
Who did you send? The dude in India?
Yeah, I was like, hey,
is he an art guy?
Yeah, he's an artist himself. Oh, he's an incredible artist, and he's just like, you know, early in my career and still now has been such a voice, you know, and stuff, like a supportive voice. And he's wild and eccentric and super fun, but he's just given that like initial jab, like, you can do this, like, keep trying. And I think everyone in life needs a friend like that at certain moments to be like, hey, like, come on, let's go.
For sure.
And that's, for me, that was him at that moment.
Dude, I get people who hit me up, a lot of people in their 20s, like, watch or listen to this. Mm. And I laugh when they hit me up and say this, because me now, I'm 45, like,
yeah,
looking at somebody in their 20s is like young to me. But when you're in your 20s, it doesn't seem young. It seems like I got to figure everything out, like, right now. People always hit me up. It's like, hey, I'm 25. You know, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm 27. You know, I don't know what the next right move is. Like, do you have a message for them? Like, imagine you doing the job interviews with the medical salesperson and trying to figure out this other passion on the side. Like,
I think it's just important to have openness to knowing that, like, what we think sometimes is our right path, like, there's so much more out there, and there's so many different inspirations and so many different outlets that can potentially turn into something that we're destined to be doing. And I think a lot of people close themselves off due to the need for security and need for affirmation and need for validation. And I think the moment you do that, it can really limit, you know, potentially a door that you've always should have been opening, you know, to arise.
There's this guy, Alex Hormozi. I interviewed him, and he had a great quote I saw on Twitter, which said, like, you know, you can outwork 99% of the people out there if you just continue to show up when you're not seeing immediate results.
Yeah.
Like, and I really thought about that.
Consistency.
That ain't easy to do, because a lot of people go, like, I tried the diet for a week, didn't work. It. You know what I mean? Yep. Or like, I went to the gym 3 days, whatever, you know, or they never kind of can push without having that immediate, you know, gratification or feedback. Mm-hmm. Like, you were just painting on the side. Were you getting that from that guy in Indiana, that kind of positive reinforcement?
I was getting that positive reinforcement. I mean, I definitely will say I have a great group of friends that I've built over the years that all are very supportive, and everyone's kind of in their own creative field and doing clothing or art or business and tech and all these different outlets and music. And, you know, having that around you allows you to feel that, you know, I can keep going with this, because it's kind of normalized.
Mm-hmm.
It was a wild start. I don't know.
So go back. So stay back there for a second. So you're in LA, you're painting. Now, you came down, you were making clothes for influencers, right? That's kind of what you were doing?
Yeah, it was kind of a mix of two things. I had a brand that I started with my brother in high school. I was like 15. We were like the kids in high school printing on t-shirts.
Nice.
It was right when like Mac Miller and Wiz and all these people were kind of making these cool, like, kind of, you know, like, you look at like Zoomies and Vans and like Hot Topic back in the day. Like, the graphic t-shirt was such a big thing. And my brother was really skilled in graphic design, and I always felt like I was good at bringing people together and helping guide telling a story to make it like brandable.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for, you know, 5 to 10 years. I was like doing it all the way up into like my sophomore year of college. And then when I came down here, we're like, hey, how can we kind of create different linear markets within this branding or within this brand? And we said, okay. It was kind of before all the influencers had merged. It was before all like the kind of celebrities had their own apparel lines and makeup and all that stuff. And I said, oh, it'd be really interesting to like help them. And the one thing that we did is we just never really asked for anything back. We said, hey, we have this opportunity to help you out. If you want to build this, we can do it for like a very, 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 very low percent. I'm talking, we made nothing doing it. Hence why I was sleeping on a friend's couch. But we just thought, you know, this would be a good test to see if it's possible. So I met a lot of people doing that here in LA and just helping build their brands. And ultimately that made me really hate doing clothing,
say, like,
just because it's like,
what was it like dealing with influencers? I interviewed for years. Any horror stories?
There's a lot of horror stories. But I think every individual is different. There's people I've worked with that are great, and I'm sure you've worked with people that are great.
Of course.
And then you work with people that are a disaster. And it's those moments really kind of take it out of you. And if you have a couple of those back to back, you're just like, yeah, I think I should probably pivot at this point.
Was there anything specific, without naming names, that happened?
Yeah, but
Okay.
I'm on NDAs and all that stuff. Oh, so okay. I'm just like,
that's fair. All right.
This is not worth it. But I learned so much during that process. I learned how to deal with people. I learned how to tell multiple different stories from multiple
different people. You probably learned social media. Viewpoints.
Yep. A little bit. I still, social media is such a tricky thing and such a mind in my opinion, but it was a really fast intro to LA. I'll put it that way. It was like, hey, here's LA in ego. Here's LA in the worst form. Here's LA in the best form. Like, let's just hear it all is.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to be here? Do you want to live here? Do you want to do it? And I'm like, I don't know if I want to do this. And that's that moment that phone call happened. So I was like, I was really low. I was really, really low at that. And I was like, I need to move home kind of situation.
Wow.
Yeah. If I'm getting $100 for groceries and taking a phone call, like that's where it was at.
So you're in LA and I love the struggling, you're starving artist. Like you were legit a starving artist.
Yeah.
But you were, first of all, shout out Donnie Namias,
right?
You guys, and which wild to me. So you guys are crashing on a couch. You got a little place together, right?
Yeah. So we actually moved in. I met Donnie through the rounds of doing clothing downtown. And we had a friend that was a sales rep for Donnie who was also helping me sell my clothes at the time. And he was like, can you go meet up with Donnie? Like, he needs some help with a photo shoot. And I was like, yeah, sure. Like, he's going to pay you $500. So, okay. I never got paid Donnie, just letting you know. He never paid me. So that's always a funny story. But we met up and I was like, wow, I feel like I'm like staring at my twin brother. Like, he's doing stuff that I feel like I'm doing. He's way more skilled at it, way more knowledgeable. But like, we should definitely like, you know, be friends because I think there'll be beneficial aspects to it. And I didn't realize that he was driving up from Santa Barbara to LA every single day. And I was sleeping on my friend's couch and I was like, bro, should we just get a place together? Like, should we move in? We met each other maybe 2 weeks before that conversation happened.
Oh, wow.
And he's like, yeah, but like, I'm strapped. And I'm like, well, I'm strapped. I was like, I have this other friend that also wants to move in. I was like, there's this one bedroom. Should we just do it? And we got this one bedroom with three guys. One dude was in the kitchen. Me and Donnie were like twin mattresses on the floor, side by side, just trying to scrape by to like be able to stay in LA and figure it out. I mean, this is 6-7 years ago. But that moment, I think, is like also a determining factor for a lot of different people's personalities. It's like, if you're willing to kind of hang in there, like we're talking about, and strap it out, and you see the vision, you see like where you want to be, I think that always will outweigh those difficult times.
Well, first of all, I should have mentioned Donnie Namias, founder of the Namias clothing brand.
Yeah.
Would you call it a premium streetwear brand? I don't know.
I'd say it's like luxury menswear.
Luxury menswear. Yeah. There you go. Everybody check them out.
Yeah.
But so you're also working. So you mentioned before with LA, like you saw kind of the ego Hollywood kind of life, and then, you know, the good side of it too. You were working at the Chateau Marmont.
Yeah.
Which infamous hotel in LA. I mean, going back to the 60s and 70s, you didn't have everyone from Sinatra to Elvis in there.
Yeah.
Even now you got George Clooney and DiCaprio hanging out at the bar. So you guys were bartending there, right?
Yeah, I wanted something that was flexible and needed money because like the clothing stuff wasn't paying the bills.
Yeah.
Like the start of art wasn't paying bills. Like this was so early into it. And I was like, I need something flexible. But I know that the Chateau like pays well and it's a really cool spot.
For
And I went like multiple weeks in a row to just go, and I sat in the lobby with a little dress shirt on and a tie and slacks and was like, can I speak to the manager? Can I speak to the manager? And finally, like the woman that ran, like I think it was the catering department, she came out and was like, okay, we have a job. You know, you can come in here, you can start bartending, you can do whatever, help out with the events. And I got in there. I was like, yo, this is wild. It was like the craziest job to have. I thought it was so fun. I still say to this day, like if someone was like, you want to come back for a night? I was like, yeah. Like it was just a really cool way to kind of have a bird's eye view on Hollywood, not being from here and seeing it all unfold. And then quickly, Donnie, I think, was actually working at the Four Seasons doing the same thing. I was like, yo, you got to come over to Chateau. Like it's so fun here, like whatever. So we both got in there and we were running like night shifts catering for like after parties and random hotel room things. It was a wild time, but it allowed us both to have a little bit of money to inject into like painting or inject into clothing, and then also like still afford to be in this little one bedroom all together. So
yeah.
It was a really cool time.
Did you ever like see celebrities like doing they shouldn't, like partying hard and stuff?
Yeah, it's like it's the most infamous hotel I think here with all the crazy stories. Like I think all I can say is what you probably hear goes on there definitely goes on there.
So like I was curious too, I've heard a couple stories from that place, and what I'm always amazed with is, you know, celebrity A is there doing blow at 4 o'clock in the morning with someone who's not his wife, and you know, they're running around like that. How does like the bartender or waitress not call TMZ? Like, how does that stuff stay out?
I think it's just a respect thing. I think people that want to stir up other people's lives got a lot of issues of themselves. So it's like, sure, you know, obviously there's contracts and NDAs and all that stuff, but like,
I guess so,
I think just there's a pride and a security with that place that's been held forever.
Gotcha.
And it's just like, stay out of other people's business. I think that's just like a life lesson. I don't need to share what other people are doing, and you don't need to share what I'm doing. It's just like, that's your life. You handle it. You do your thing, and I'm going to be over here, and I'll serve you your cocktail.
You know what's wild? Like, you know, you guys slugged it out and slept in the one bedroom apartment. I'm talking about you and Donnie. And what's wild is now you're both wildly successful, really, by any metric you use to track it, right?
Yeah.
You know, he's wildly successful with his clothing brand. You know, I love his clothes.
Yeah.
And he's got the NBA wearing his clothes right everyone. Now, which is wild. Yeah. You've got, you know, tech billionaires, you know, getting their paintings your paintings in their house.
Mm.
What made you guys different than everybody else who comes to LA for a dream?
Yeah.
How many people today, right now, you know, got to LA, they're in Hollywood somewhere, you know, they're staying in like a short-term motel or something until they figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, what makes you guys different than everyone else who does it and then goes home?
I think it's a two-part answer to that question. I think success is also determined by like your own personal standards. You know, like success for me was being able to create a narrative and a platform to be able to share what was really true to me. And through my art, I'm able to do that. And that's the success. That's all I need to be able to do that. It's not a money metric. It's not a clout or fame metric. It's simply the idea of being able to wake up every single morning and keep doing what I want to do. And that for me has been amazing. I think Donnie would say the same. It's like just being able to create clothing every single day is successful to him. He could care less about all the glitz and glam. It's just the fact that he gets to design and be in a studio with a team of people and lead the charge on that. I think what would make us different, I think that we just understood and have stayed being able to understand that if we keep our head down, things will work out. And I think if you treat people well, you're generous with your time and your money, you lift people up and you also bring other people up with you, that you'll always be able to win. And people give up all the time and things get rough. It's not like you just get to a certain platform, everything's good. It's like there's another challenge. And I'd say it's even harder now than it was when I started. And we joke about all the time, like, that one bedroom was the shit. Like, that was fun. Like, it was like the ignorance is bliss situation.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of nice to have all that before this. And, you know, we're both extremely blessed and grateful for the opportunities we have right now. But, you know, I'll say it again and again, success is simply just being able to continue to do what we do every single day. And we still keep our heads down. We still have the same mindset. Nothing's changed.
Yeah. I think too that the part that you didn't hit on, which I think is important, and I found this with me, there's got to be an almost delusional self like thought that like, of course I'm gonna make it. There's like that unshakable inner belief that of course a kid from Beaverton, Oregon would come down here and become, you know, a successful artist. Like, why wouldn't he? You know, Donnie from Santa Barbara, of course, why wouldn't a kid who used to print t-shirts in high school, like, of course he would have a wildly successful brand.
Mm.
Like, so you guys obviously had that, and every successful person I've ever talked to.
Yeah.
So somebody told me, like, you have to be almost delusional.
I think so, yeah.
You really do.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like genuinely, I can speak for myself, and I think a lot of my friends that I have as well, is we've really put in the work over and over and over again. And, you know, I show up to this studio 5 days a week, even the days that I don't want to paint, just to learn more about what I'm doing. And if it's not painting, I'm developing something else. And people are like, yo, are you ever going to take a break? It's like, yeah, I'll take a break when I feel like I'm getting to the point of where I want to see this really come to life. And I don't think that's ever going to end. I think that you just continually keep building. And I don't think it's like a workaholic syndrome or anything like that. I think when you're passionate and love what you do, and you really have that, maybe that knowing, you want to do it every single day, and you want to get better and better at what you do. I love learning. Learning's the biggest thing in the world to me. And every day that I'm in here, I learn something new about myself. I learn something new about art, and I learn something new about technique. And that's like the highest high I could ever have. That's like the most amazing part of my life every single day.
So you're you're doing the deal, you're painting, yeah. right? No one cares. No one gives a shit, right? Yeah. What's your first big break?
First big break, I would say I had, I met like a friend. Mm-hmm. I say friend now. At the time, we were kind of getting to know each other. And he was like, I'd love to buy one of your pieces. And I was like, okay. And it was like this big old piece. And I was mm-hmm. like, here's $1,000. I'm like, oh man, like $1,000. Like
I got rent. This
hell
month.
Yeah. Like yeah. This is big. Like that's like a lot of work at the chateau.
For sure.
And he bought the piece. He put it in his house. His parents saw the art piece as well. Mm-hmm. And then his parents contacted me and said, hey, I'm so-and-so's parents. I'd love to come by the studio. Boom, they came by and they're like, what do you want to sell these for?
Well, hold on, pause.
Yeah.
You're not selling the story enough, right?
Yeah.
What do they roll up in?
Oh, it's like, it's like first time I've seen like a nice like Rolls Royce or something like that.
Yeah, they roll up in Rolls with like a driver or security or something, right?
Yeah, I was like, but it was like classy. It wasn't like this flashy thing. It was just like, it was a classy moment. It
sure.
was very like highbrow. It was beautiful. And I was, I was in this, I finally kind of skipped this part. I was in this small studio space above Hollywood Boulevard, like mm-hmm. right on the Star Walk. It was, 10 by 10 foot, could barely fit like 3 paintings in there mm-hmm. and was just in there like chain smoking and like trying to paint and figure out what was happening. And I was kind of starting to find the language that I'm working in now in a primitive way back then. And so I had about 4 or 5 paintings. And this moment happens where like my friend at the new friend at the time bought the piece. His parents then come in, were very supportive, very like, this is really incredible what you're doing. Like, we'd love to help support you. We like what you're doing. What would you want to sell these for? And I'm just like, you can have them. Like, that just means the world that you like them.
She's
like, no, like, what would be like a good price? I was like, I don't know. One day it would be cool to sell for like 8,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
And so I remember she just like whipped out her checkbook and gave me the check. She's like, okay, I'll take this one and this one. And I was like, what?
So
like,
$8,000 each, so you wrote your check for $16,000?
I think it was each. Or
what
maybe
did that
one for
feel
both.
Like at the time? It
felt like $1,000,000, like being handed to you. And I think even more so than just like the transaction, it was like the support from, this woman and her husband at the highest form early in my career, knowing that they knew infinite amounts about the art world, so much about artwork and so much about art history, et cetera. And they were like, we want to support it and we see this be good. And, the spiral effect that came from, being able to be part of their collection, really helped me. And like kind of from that moment, everything kind of started to slowly unfold and the tempo started to pick up. And, it was a couple months after that, I was approached to do my first show. And that first show had like, we rented a spot in West Hollywood on like Beverly and Crescent, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And got contacted by this art dealer. It's called Coats and Scary. They're like, we want to throw an art show for you. Boom, 800 people showed up.
800 people?
The show sold out 2 weeks before it opened. And I'm sitting there like, I remember I was sitting on the street, on the corner. They put like my name on the building. They had like the show title. And it was like, it was called Guardians. It was the first show. It was like the birth of like a lot of my narrative now. And I remember sitting there like in the middle of the intersection, like cars blaring, just like, in this moment of like, what has happened in the past? Like, this is a year post that phone call. This is 1 year from that phone call.
Oh my God. I was just going to ask you that.
Yeah. I was just like, wow. And I'm thinking about like, damn, I've kept my head down. I've been so consistent. I haven't made it about myself. I haven't made it about anything, but about learning and growing.
Sure.
And now this is happening. And it was like, whoa, boom, event happens. Everything goes well. And then I'm like, I think I'm a painter now. I gotta do this. And things just started going after that. Like that was like, I think origin, like the first couple year origin story.
Yeah.
Of, the start of it all. There's also a lot of stuff on that credit card from the past that you gotta pay off. So it wasn't like you're just making a ton of money. It's, everything was about building the vision more and more and upgrading the studio to have more space to be able to create larger pieces and find ways to travel, to meet galleries and meet art dealers and stuff like that and connect with collectors. So it wasn't like a flash in the pan, like we made it. Oh, this is real. There's
we
a lot more
we
have to do. And it's still that. It's still, hard and still a process, but I've been so lucky with how many people have come along to support and be part of the journey and have lifted me up and helped and been patrons and all that.
Now, I think you've done a really good job and I've read some articles. I mean, I love you, man. Some of these people are so boring, the people who, I guess, wrote these articles, yeah. right? Because there's such a great story behind this, like an exciting story, you know? And it's kind of like artified. I don't know if that's like a word.
Understandable,
like, you know, there's kind of like some pretentiousness kind of, it seems like associated with that. But it also seems like, and again, I know nothing about the art world at all.
Yeah.
But from an outsider, you really got to brand yourself like very like thoughtfully and like, because you're, I guess you could do it. It would be easy to have that first show and do a quick money grab to create, you know, your artist Instagram page to start making merch. Like, you know, hey, what if I could sell hoodies too all the time? Like you could easily
do the commercial aspect to it all.
For sure.
Yeah.
You know, but you didn't. And I think you've done a really good job of positioning yourself as a premier brand, not just your artwork, but like you personally. I guess they're intertwined if you're an artist, right? You are kind of the art and vice versa, right?
Yeah.
Did that first, you know, your friend's mom who was in the art world, did she help you kind of navigate that? Or is that something you knew? Or?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've always, you know, I struggled in my past with like pretty heavy, like from like 16 to 20, I'm 29 now, 16 to like 25, like really bad panic disorder. And had really crazy anxiety. And earlier in like late high school time, like it got really, really bad. And so I've always kind of had this kind of, I don't want to say self-consciousness, but like I kind of afraid to be really out there with who I am. And like, I've always tried to be more private. And when I kind of started to have that moment, I remember the day after my show, there was like an article that came, like two articles came out, and like, I think it was like Hypebeast or something. And I remember, I remember I was sitting with my mom and dad in this Airbnb, and I had like a full-blown panic attack because I was so scared about like my name being out there and like having, like when people say like you're putting your heart out there with your work, it like really hit me. I remember I had a full-blown panic attack with my parents, and my parents like, everything's all right, but like what's going on? I'm like, I'm freaking out. Like, this is scary. Like, I almost don't want my image to even be associated with the art. I want the art to speak for itself. And I remember when that woman that bought my first piece, I you know, I really drew near to their family to ask advice, and they connected me with advisors and people that had been in the art world for years and years to kind of help me understand, like, you know, we're not going to do this right away. We're not going to push this giant commercial brand because that's not who you are as a person. That's not where your art's, you know, directed. That's not the narrative you're trying to say and share. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, I had, I'd say 5 to 10 people right off the back that kind of came in, and I was like, I think you guys are safe. I think you guys are good. And then you kind of weed them out and you pick 5 or 6 of them. And my entire career so far, I have weekly phone calls with these people. I'm constantly getting advice and help when I need. And it's been a beautiful thing.
So what is that? So, okay, you have your first show, you sell. Okay. Yeah. Like, I don't even understand. And none of us do watching this. Yeah. Like, what the progression of you know, high-end artist is.
Yeah.
So you have your first show. Like, is there a goal in mind to get in certain auction houses or something? Like, what's the goal for you as an artist?
I mean,
like, I need to get here.
Yeah,
what is it?
I think there's no set plan. Like, you can read all these books about, like, you know, how to do this in the art world or how to be this. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there really is this, like, linear path of how to be this successful artist. There's so many different avenues to be able to be successful. And going back to the word success is determinant of your definition of that.
For sure.
But, you know, for me, it was right after I did that first show. And it was like, you know, independent art dealers, we rented a space. It wasn't like a physical brick and mortar gallery that kind of people knew. Mm-hmm. I always wanted to be represented by certain galleries. I had them in mind for years. And I knew that there were certain galleries that I needed to show with in order to kind of work my way through the academia of the art world. And I didn't want to just try to shoot for the stars and like do all this stuff myself. I really wanted to, because I didn't study art in college, I wanted to gain the kind of academic knowledge of, you know, what does it look like to navigate this world? And how do I protect my artwork so it's not just accessible to everyone and anyone who wants to kind of use and abuse it and flip it on auction houses? How do we protect something that I've poured my heart into for years in order for it to be a point of longevity where, you know, institutions and museums someday are like, hey, we'd love to have this in permanent collections. I think that's the goal for a lot of artists, especially kind of in my path, is like, obviously you want museums, you want institutions, you want big family collections or public collections to show your work because there's a permanence to it. And that's important because the moment you sell art, it's really out of your hands and things can happen and be traded and flipped and all that. And it gets scary because it kind of sucks to be like, you know, like,
yeah,
you kind of become this token of equity or something. And,
it's a transaction.
Yeah. And so that's why I've been so focused on like we talked about off camera, but like longevity and slow growth, you know, and
there's nothing sexy about that.
You're always fighting the devil in your head, right? I don't care who you are. That's always going to be something, right?
Of course.
And I'm fortunate that I'm able to still do what I do and be able to, you know, have a team around me, have advisors around me, be able to, you know, pay for my things that I can operate with and my tools and my supplies. And that's where I'm happy at right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, God willing, in the future, the things start really unfolding. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about, you just hinted at it too. I've got my mental illness story. I actually just made a video about it. It's extensive.
Right? Yeah.
But talk about, you mentioned having panic disorders too.
Yeah.
I mean, mental illness, it seems like now you're of the generation where you're kind of lucky in a sense that it was kind of talked about.
Yeah.
Like, it's not odd now to say, like, I had a panic attack. Like, the person watching this goes, oh, yeah, I had a panic attack. Oh, I remember that Thanksgiving where my aunt freaked out and she had a panic attack.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's, like, something that's kind of talked about. Like, for me, no one even talked about or even talked about going to therapy, you know? But for you, like, how did you work through that? Was there a stigma associated with it or was, like, pretty open?
I mean, I think anyone around me knows that I'm like an external processor. Like I think, and then the moment like something comes up, how do I get help with this? Where do I go? Blah, blah, blah. And I've been like that since a kid. But when it got bad, like 17, 18, 19, even 20, I remember I was in counseling 3 days a week, 3 hours a day.
Oh damn.
And it was like after school, like go and get your mind fixed. Like I remember my mom and dad were just like, you know, shout out mom and dad. They're so loving and caring during this point. But like, I remember seeing their face like scared. Like when you see your parents scared for you and you just can't get out of it. And it's day after day after day, just trying to find someone that can help. It was a long journey. And it's still something that I battle with at certain times. I think, you know, after you spend 3 college years or something like that, hypothetically, in counseling, you kind of have a better grip on it, but I don't think it's anything that goes away. And if anything, I've started to look at a lot of the anxiety from my past and, you know, panics and all this different stuff as more of a blessing looking forward, because it really grounded me. It took me to be like, hey, we're not going to come out like this. Like you physically can't, because the moment you do this, you get humbled because you're freaking out in this crowd or you're like thinking you're the man and then boom, you're back down. And so it really kind of always kept me here and made me so much more sympathetic to people around me, because you start to pick up when you have stuff going on, you can start seeing like, I know this guy's feeling the same way or this girl's feeling the same way. And you're able to kind of create this, like, it's like almost like this like ground framework around you of being able to extend your knowledge to help people, and ultimately that helps you with your own stuff. And it's been beautiful to watch.
It's funny, I completely relate to mental illness kind of, you know, it sucks. You know, overall it was painful for me, but it did make me more empathetic, because I've been through all that. Like, I, you know, 3 months where I can't get out of bed. Like, so when I see somebody, you know, where other people just go, I showed up to work, like, just go work out today. Like, what's the problem? You'll feel better. It's like, dude, I can't even brush my teeth today. Like, working out seems like a monumental task. You might as well ask me to climb Mount Everest, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I come at it not like that person. Like, no, I get it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I've been there. I've had a panic
attack. It's super tough. And I think, like, and this might be, like, a hot topic or, like, buzzword or whatever, but I felt personally, in my opinion, that kind of over the years, almost mental health has became a clickbait or like a cliche.
For sure.
Where it's like, I'm having anxiety or I'm having anxiety.
Or I have OCD.
OCD. And it's like, I get
really
that. But like, at what point does it, like, the people that are like really like on the edge, you know, do we kind of sweep it by? Or even how I view it, it's like, oh, mental illness. But I find myself talking about it again, or finding myself talking about anxiety. It's like, there still is those people that are actually on the verge and like on the edge.
There's somebody
like,
right now watching who is on the edge.
And that's the thing, is like, when we talk about stuff like this, it can't be a cliche. You know, it can't be something that's just kind of like swept under the rug. It's something that needs to be focused on, because so many people still need that help. And there's not a lot of resources for people that are in different parts of the world or different economical situations to be able to do that.
Different cultures where it's not acceptable.
It's just like, I'm happy that I've went through what I did and what I've gone through mentally and kind of come out and seen the light at the end of light at the end of the tunnel and got to where I am now to be able to see those people and help them if I can.
So what tools do you use? Therapy? Anything else help you?
I think therapy is a great thing. Yeah, I think therapy is great.
Yeah.
Like, I think I did a lot of it. Now
every Friday.
Now the thought of it, I'm like, okay.
Every Friday at 9 o'clock, shout out Liz, my therapist.
Amazing.
I'll talk to you tomorrow morning, you know, every week. So
I think it's important. I mean, for me, when I started painting and started being in the studio, so much of my stuff like really calmed down because it was like, you know, it's me alone, maybe with one other person. And I spend, you know, 10 hours a day getting to kind of just think. And so much of like the anxiety and the panic or whatever comes from being like overstimulated in this world, right? And we have all this injection of things coming at us and people telling us stuff and comparison, which is always a thief of joy.
It
kills you. And so when I kind of separated myself, I was like, I think pain is a good avenue for me, which that man might have seen. It was like, you kind of just need to be on your own and build this and spend your time alone and then come out for these moments to show your work. It slowed everything down for me. And I think it's the only way I'm able to live in LA, because LA is so fast paced and so hectic, is that my career is really getting to sit one-on-one in front of a canvas, having a conversation with the piece.
Cool.
Yeah. And it's like my own personal little like meditation for 10 hours a day.
For sure.
So
I get to talk to you. There's not a bunch of people around.
Yeah.
I actually like when people around when we do these, but it's kind of neat. Like today I'm just going to have like an interesting conversation with Devin for an hour today.
Yeah.
Like that's my day.
I'm going to mess up your whole podcast.
Yeah.
Like, who's this guy?
Who cares? You know, whatever. Yeah. But I'm the same way. Like, but most days I'm sitting, I'm writing articles for Forbes, I'm booking guests, but I'm by myself.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not. And the other thing too, is you mentioned like everything being fast paced and stuff, especially in the social media world, like you're of the age where you should be posting, you know, a million times a day. And I could just imagine like if a social media manager walked in here now, they'd be like, you should post that picture right now. You should have a Snapchat series. Yeah. You should have a YouTube channel. You should be doing all this stuff. But like you're somehow, I think you're a good example of thriving without living in that world.
Yeah.
Like you can still, I know it's crazy in 2023, have a successful career without blowing up overnight on social.
Yeah, it's honestly a great like kind of leeway of what you're talking about. Is I just worked on for like probably the past 8 months a series of work that was all about this idea of intimate moments being like a performance. And so it was like these figures kind of intertwined and these shapes and structures kind of intertwined, but there's always the background would be some sort of like curtain backdrop. And the whole discussion for me was like so much of our intimacy that we have in life between individuals, between thoughts, between views of ourselves, we broadcast. And you know, a lot of people have talked on the subject, but it's like at what point and where's the line between like intimacy and then performance, and how do we keep intimate moments and thoughts true to ourselves and true to like being a beautiful moment, a beautiful essence, or just being like, hey, let's craft this moment in order to create a performance for people to be then involved in it. And I think teetering on those lines is important. So that whole work that's showing in New York right now actually opens today.
Oh, nice.
Is about that. That's really cool with art too, is because I'm able to interact with the ideas and thoughts that process through my mind or through conversations with people like yourself
or
whoever walking down the street, and then being able to kind of take that in, absorb it, process it, and then regurgitate it in a way that makes sense to, you know, how I speak through my language with art.
Dude, you're so right. You just made me think about something too. There's this YouTuber mom who's horrible lady, without getting the story and bumming everybody out.
Yeah.
She just got charged with like 4 counts of child abuse, right?
Oh, geez.
And I mean, it's crazy, but to me, I've always been suspicious of family YouTubers. I'm sure there's, you know, nice, you know, good people out there doing it. But is it a performance, or are we capturing the moment, or is everything staged, or are the kids now child actors? Like my kids, I don't show on social media. My one, my younger one's a ham and like is like kind of a performer. You can tell she's going to do something.
Yeah.
So she gets in there sometimes, right? But I try to, my older one's super shy, so I do not broadcast that at all.
Yeah.
My wife's not very public. You know, I put myself out there, but they didn't ask for this. So, you know, so I understand what you're saying. Like, even somebody watching this, you know, when you're taking a picture with your friend, is it, you know, are we standing a certain way to so that we look better in the light so we'll get more likes? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The camera's always on. You mentioned a backdrop, like there's a curtain behind us.
Yeah.
Well, there's kind of a curtain. Well, obviously now there's a curtain because there's three cameras and mics out there. That's right. But whenever we have our phone out, there's kind of a curtain behind us too.
Yeah. So it's one of those like never ending thoughts, because it's like you can talk about something about being like private, and then we do something like this, which is not private, right?
Yes.
So then you kind of feel like an imposter.
We're being public talking about something
and
private.
It's a never ending cycle. And I think that's the hard part, is like, is there privacy anymore? You know, can you even talk about privacy in a public setting without sounding, you know, hypocritical? But it's just, I think so much of especially my generation was instructed to kind of show everything and like be seen. And now I think there's just such a luxury in being private. And I think there's more pull for people that are like, wait, what's going on in their life? Like, why don't we know what's going on? Why don't we know what's going on?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, it's okay not to know.
Yeah.
And it's okay not to have to show everything. And that's something I struggle with art all the time, is like, I don't post a ton, you know, I do probably more so than some, but
yeah,
I don't want to show every part of my lifestyle. I want my art to speak for itself. I want that narrative to cap, like, to gain its traction and go. And I'll pop up here and there where I can, but like, I don't need to be in front of a camera every single day. I don't need to be like, hey, look at me. You know, it's just, this is what's important to me.
Yeah.
And building this and creating a platform where subjects like mental health and this and this and this can all be talked about. This is an avenue and a symbol for so many thoughts and ideas that I hope really like stay permanent for years to come.
So what inspires you? Like when I came in the first time, you had music playing. Like, do you listen to music while you paint? Do you listen to music all day?
Yeah, I like music. I like jazz a lot.
Really?
I love jazz. I like,
and
I don't
who
know.
Who are your guys? Ooh, who do you like?
I like Bill Evans a lot.
Okay.
There's a UK guy. He's a little more new school. Alpha Mist. I love his music a lot. And this guy I've been listening to probably for like the last year a lot. Not really jazz, but his artist named Dijon. I love his sound. Like, I probably know every song at this point. So
okay,
he's great. But yeah, I mean, sometimes it's nice being, I mean, you can hear when it's, the cars aren't going by, it's quiet.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's nice just to sit here and hear the sounds of making art.
What inspires you? Like, is it books you read? Like, where do you come up with that idea? Well, first of all, let's take a painting like this behind us, right?
Yeah.
So what's the inspiration behind this?
Is
like, what does it mean?
This painting I've had in here for a long time. I have always kind of felt like it was one of the original figures that I made that kind of like started everything.
Okay.
And, you know, tying back to my studies of world religion, so much of the conversation was what separates everyone through these worldviews. And for me, I wanted to find an identifier that people could relate to rather than creating distance between people. How do we bring it together through the idea of finding one single identifier? And for me, it was like, after studying the world religions and spending time in places like Haiti and Jerusalem and,
oh, wow,
you know, you name it, going to really dive deep into like cultural, you know, ideas, I realized that there's always this kind of craving and need for some sort of spiritual protection or protection in general.
Mm-hmm.
Even religious or non-religious, we still have friends or family members or a dog or, you know, a deity that we see that helps us in these times of need. And for me, it's consistent across everything that I've studied. And so I kind of coined it was like, it's either man, animal, or deity, or man or woman, animal, or deity.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started painting, I wanted to find a symbol or a way to blend those three things to create this idea of a protector that, regardless of your beliefs or regardless of your worldviews, when you place it in a home, it has this idea of protection. So for me, this was like, on the first show, was called Guardians. And it was a symbol. It was these figures that were supposed to be representations of, you know, you have a certain set of beliefs, I have a certain set of beliefs. Mm-hmm. I see that in this and you'll see that in this. And it doesn't have to be the same, but it's the idea that we need this protection and guidance in life to kind of get to wherever we want to be.
Nice.
Just as I have had it in my career, and I'm sure you've had it.
Sure.
Struggles and mental health, or you name
it. Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah.
So what's your career look like now? Like, how, you know, you're successful, like, where can we find your stuff? Like, what are you up to? Like,
yeah,
what
I mean,
does the future look for, like, for you?
Yeah, I mean, I've I had a show 2 months ago in LA. It was a show at UTA. It was something I was working on for a while. Next year,
that's very Hollywood. Look at you. That's about as Hollywood. Nah. United Talent Agency, right? Yeah. For the rest of us who don't live in this world.
Yeah, there was it was a beautiful experience. The gallery space there and the team that they have were people that I've looked up to and loved for years. The space is amazing. They have a great program. I think they're very inclusive with who they bring in. It was an opportunity I kind of wanted to do. I did some shows in New York and select kind of group shows and fairs all over the world for the past couple of years. And then I wanted to come back and do one final show in LA before doing a lot of international tour next year.
Oh, wow.
Doing some stuff in New York, then New York again, and then going into Sweden and then looking like Korea at the end of the year.
Wow.
I'll have more announcements on like specific galleries of where that's all showing, but really excited for what's happening. And yeah, I mean, you can follow me if you want, but yeah. I don't post a lot.
So. I know. After just like, yeah. You know, bad mathing social for the last half hour, you know, follow me, I guess.
Cut that.
Yeah, right? Where can we see your stuff? Just on your socials, on Instagram?
Yeah, social. And then I think the best place, I always feel that art is best viewed in person. So when I do exhibitions, I think that's always the best place to see them.
Okay. Actually, one more thing too, before we wrap it up.
Yeah.
Digital world, right? Mm. And we were talking before, NFTs, right?
Yeah.
Which, who knows? I don't know if they're coming back or whatever after they all crash. But like, is there a thought, like, I understand kind of what you're trying to build and stuff, but okay, the person in Ohio watching this goes, I'm never going to go to Sweden. And I don't even know like how to get to an art gallery. Like, so they'll never see this in person. Yeah. So what do you have for them? Like, is there a way, or is there a thought, like, how do you bring that person along for the ride or like into your world?
Yeah, I mean, digital space, I've done work in that atmosphere. Mm-hmm. I think the technology aspect behind it is beautiful. I think about, you know, the permanence in that kind of blockchain technology is something that drew me in. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of interesting ideas that can be used through AI and, you know, creating forms of your art and references for your art through these processes. But, you know, I'm still developing ways to kind of create more inclusiveness to the art and accessibility, cool. I guess. But for right now, I think that just my focus is painting and continuing to paint and going through the process of showing with galleries that I feel connected to and people that I feel connected to.
Nice. Well, thank you so much, man.
Thank you.
The wildest origin story of like, I think 6 years or 5 or 6 years of doing this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the wildest one I've heard. So. Thank you guys so much for watching. Make sure you subscribe and turn on notifications. New interviews every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And we go live now Tuesday and Thursday nights at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We've got merch. Check it out in the YouTube shop or the levelupshop.com. Thanks, guys.